You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi. Welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I'm a little bit worried about him, man. His last Facebook status I saw was taking selfies in front of a train, and now he's not here today. So
we are friends with fantasy benefits.
Questioning management for calling up players that he deemed worse than him, which I think is outstanding. I love players like that. confidence should be a tool.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Somebody's giving him bad advice down there, but he's only 17 years old.
I wonder
so.
If Alex Reyes' weed dealer was the one that supplied him with steroids.
Hey, I want to keep this off the record, but I'm giving all my 17-year-old steroids if I can help it.
We are friends with fantasy benefits.
Welcome back. Another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. This is another Thursday prospect show, and we are minus one individual. It's kind of upsetting already. Mr. Andy Andres Anderson is absent tonight, the AAA. Andy Anderson absent from the prospect show tonight. So it's just going to be me and you, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm a little bit worried about him, man. His last Facebook status I saw was taking selfies in front of a train, and now he's not here today, so...
I'm a little worried about you for checking out his Facebook status, to be honest.
He's my newest Facebook, one of my newest Facebook friends, you know. So I happened to see that on my feed, and I was like, oh well. My career is I work with trains, so we always deal with people like that. So,
well, he definitely will be missed, and he's gonna miss this show because we're talking about shortstops today. We've gone through our top 10 lists for. What, catcher, first base, and second base. Now we are on to shortstop. It's not arguably, it is the top position in the minor leagues right now. And if you were to ask me this question 5 years ago, I would have said that shortstop is one of the shallowest positions and we can get through it really fast. We probably would have talked about Xander Bogaerts, Carlos Correa, maybe a couple other guys, and that's it. But this position now is the deepest I've ever seen it in my time. I don't know about you, Matt.
Yeah, it's definitely the golden age of shortstops, man. Even like you said, major league level on down to the minor leagues, it's absolutely crazy. You're looking at some of the guys we're going to talk about today in our top 10s are probably not even top 25 dynasty assets right now at shortstop. How crazy is that?
It is. It's nuts. I'm excited about this list, so I do want to get this started. This is episode 225 of the show. Again, please continue to rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, any of the podcast aggregators in which you can listen to the program. Really has been helping us out. We are now in the top 10 of the fantasy baseball realm on iTunes and also in the top 25 of just overall baseball shows, so that is all due to you guys rating and reviewing the podcast. It really has helped out. So again, really appreciate it. We have a couple days left in our clothing campaign that Justin launched. If you want to
call it that. Yeah.
If you want to grab some FWFB gear, that's still going on. It's on teespring.com. It's on our Facebook group page. So there's a lot of different places in which you can look for that and, you know, get some Friends with Fantasy Benefits gear before the season starts. It definitely helps us out. We get a little small cut of that as well. So check that out. Matt, where can you be reached on Twitter and such?
MBTompFWFB, and you know, as you listen to this podcast, I think it'd be pretty cool if you pulled up that top 200 list I spent some time on, and you can get a feel for, you know, the little bigger picture of where we have all these, for lack of a better word, where we have all these studs, because it's deep.
Yeah, I love the top 200 list that you put out a few days ago. It's certainly... really informative. It's something that I like to look at. So definitely make sure that you look at that. It's under our rankings page on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits website. So Matt put in a lot of time. Definitely check it out. You can check me out on Twitter at Mike Warner FWFB. And let's get this thing started, man. So our top 10 list of shortstop starts with me. At number one, I have Dansby Swanson. This is purely based on proximity to the majors. He has tremendous plate skills, strong batting average floor. 2020 is certainly achievable in his prime years. That's in home runs and stolen bases. He's going to obviously start the year in the majors this season. We'll see how long he stays in the majors. If he struggles, he could be sent down. But upside-wise, he's not my top overall guy, but he's already in the majors. He was the number one overall pick. There's not a lot of bad things to talk about with Swanson, so he takes my number one spot. How about you, Matt?
I cannot argue with that, man. That Dansby was under consideration for number one, but I ultimately went with my ceiling, and I went with Brendan Rodgers. Yeah, he's probably slightly – you can make an argument that he might be overrated for me and in the overall fantasy realm, but because he doesn't really have – one really plus tool. I mean, the power is the best tool, and it's above average, and the rest of the tools are average across the board. Slight question if he sticks it short. He's played a little bit of second base this year last season in Colorado for the minor leagues. I wouldn't look into that too much. I think he's a shortstop. Coors Field, though, man. Playing at Coors Field is definitely the thing that pushes me. He's going to be 2 or 3 years away, but I think you're looking at several years, 270, 280 average, 25, 30 home runs, and that's probably not even including the Coors Field boost that he's going to get. So, gotta love the upside with Rodgers. I'm assuming Rodgers is your number two.
He is my number two, and I'll mimic pretty much what you said. He has immense upside. He hit 19 home runs and 442 at bats last year in low A. It is going to take some time for him. I think he will probably get called up sometime in 2019, if we're being kind of conservative with it. Maybe if you want to be super conservative, 2020, but for now I'd say 2019 is a pretty accurate estimation. I think the power could be even higher than 30, maybe 35 plus in his prime based on the field that he plays at. The stolen bases was where I have a little bit of question. I don't know how fast he truly is. I've seen him a lot in terms of video.
I'd say about average. Yeah,
that's my thing, is I feel like he's about average base runner, but at the same time, if he's getting the opportunities, he could steal 15 to 20 in a season. So, your possible, upside for him was 270, 280 with 30 plus bombs. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I have him at 270 plus with, the Coors effects maybe pushing up to 280, 290.
And the numbers I gave you were without the Coors effect, so we're on the same page, I think.
I do think he's a future first, second round fantasy commodity yearly for at least 5+ years. So I think that him being the top asset here, or even top two, is completely fine. Based on upside alone, Rodgers has much higher potential to get fantasy owners production than Dansby Swanson, in my opinion. But based on proximity, we never know with prospects, and the fact that Rodgers has a couple years before he should be called up, that's why I'm going with Swanson at one. But I have no problem with ranking the higher upside guy up top. Just like you'll see multiple examples of this with me in my list as we go through it, because there's a few guys that are going to be making the majors rather quickly, and I don't have them ranked high.
I'm right there with you, and I guess something a little bit makes it a little cloudy for Rodgers is Trevor Story. A lot of his future is tied to Story. Third base is not an option in Colorado with Arenado, and if Rodgers has to move to second, I think Rodgers is a better defensive player than Story is. But, I mean, they might not want to mess with that, because Story's not terrible at shortstop either. So, ultimately, I do think Story shifts to second base. But, I mean, I think that's something to watch, too. And if Story keeps getting hurt and isn't dependable enough, you can see Rodgers taking that position over sooner rather than later, to be honest.
Yeah, that's just something I don't worry about right now. I worry about the position possibilities being, kind of clogged up or jammed whenever somebody's like really close to the majors. Whenever somebody's could be called up immediately and they're kind of getting stopped because there's a veteran in front of them or a young guy that is in his prime. That's when I kind of worry about it a bit, but at least right now I'm not worried about Story, because we never know with guys. Sometimes players get traded, sometimes bad injuries happen, which we never wish for, but it's just not something I like to look for now and until they get closer to the majors. Who's your number two guy, by the way?
It's Dansby Swanson. For everything you listed, the ceiling is multiple years of 300 batting averages, and like you said, 2020 is perfectly reasonable. He could even tick a couple more toward 25 to 30 in the stolen base department, and he's here now. He's a plus defensive player, and he's got beautiful long flowing locks, so he's not going anywhere for me. I don't think there's any plausible scenario where you could have any you could have anybody but these two 1-2 for me.
I agree.
And that says a lot with how deep this position is. I still think these two are the clear top guys.
Yeah, this is the top tier. Then there's probably more of a 4-5 guy tier after this. And then you're kind of looking at upside shots after that.
Yep.
But, you know, I completely agree. These two are the top at the position, and this is, again, a very deep position. So, you know, while I'm saying Brendan Rodgers has a couple years left, I don't think he's that risky. I think that his tools are good enough to bring him to the major leagues. Some people, again, they kind of just tumble downward in their prospect ranks. We were talking about a guy like Nick Williams prior to the show starting, where he was a top 25 guy on a lot of lists last year. Now, all of a sudden, he's outside the top 50, sometimes even outside of the top 100 in some lists. I don't foresee something like that with Rodgers. I think that he's going to be fairly consistent in the top 10 as we move forward. So,
agreed. And he's a guy you can plug and play for 15 years, 12, 15 years. No joke. Like,
agreed.
He'll be around for a while.
Who's your number 3 guy?
Probably a little different than yours. I'm going to guess Franklin Barreto for me.
Wow, you are high on him. I have Barreto as my number 8 guy. Tell me why you're so high on him.
I'm a bat speed whore. And that's what Barreto offers.
And when did this transition happen, by the way, too? Because we talked about him last year a good deal, and you were definitely not this high on him.
No, a lot of it, I think, is what he did this year in Double-A, the Texas League. He was amongst the youngest players in the league, and he hit .281, .340, .413, 10 homers, 30 steals. Double-A is, you know, when you go to Double-A and you put up numbers like that, you got to start taking notice. That's the big boys. It starts big boy league start when you get that high. And I love the bat speed. I think he can stick it short because he's in the right organization for it. I mean, you got to look at Oakland right now is playing Marcus Semien at shortstop. He's not a Gold Glove candidate by any means. And I think Barreto is going to be better than him. So I think he goes there. The hit tool is plus for me. I think he's going to consistently bang on the door, 300 average. The upside for me is really similar to Dansby Swanson. Not quite. He's a little tick below. I think he's 15 to 20 homers as he matures, 20 stolen base upside. And I think he can be up this year toward the second half. So he gets not enough publicity. I think a lot of guys have Gleyber Torres and stuff higher than him. But Torres is similar upside, but Torres is 2 years away. And I think Barreto... I think a lot of people are down on him because he was looked at as the unfair return for Josh Donaldson, and you can't look at it that way. You can't tie a player to who he was traded to. I know it's easier. I mean, perhaps Dansby Swanson gets a boost. I don't think, nobody gives Dansby Swanson a boost because he's traded for Shelby Miller. Like, and you shouldn't ding Barreto because he was traded for Donaldson. I think you just have to take the player for what he is, and I think Barreto, being only 20 years old, could make the major leagues this year, and I think that's amazing. So I'm going to go with Barreto.
Well, Barreto definitely gets that tag with him, though.
Yeah, I know. He does. And I think that's why people are down on him a little bit, because they think he was kind of a bust. And I'm using air quotes, but you can't see that right now, obviously. But I think they think he's a bust because he's traded for an MVP, and that's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault. Honestly, the reason why I have Barreto outside of the top 5 isn't because of his skill set, because I do love the fact that he makes such strong contact. He's been consistent in the minor leagues with his contact rate. You know, last year he was at 81% and 80% the year before that. So definitely has a great hit tool. And I think that he will be a 290-plus hitter throughout his whole entire career. My issue with him is, while he did steal 30 bases last year, he got caught 15 times. The year before that, he only stole 8 bases. And then the year before that, he stole 29. So I don't know who the real Barreto is in terms of his stolen base prowess. I do think, based on watching him, that he does have 20 stolen base upside, but I don't think he's a 30 stolen base guy. And no. I don't think the power is that of a 20 home run guy either. I certainly don't like the home park for that. And he plays in other parks as well that aren't really conducive to home run output. I just think he's more of like a 10-15 home run guy, and then 15-ish stolen bases, which is nice with a strong hit tool. But the 30 stolen bases is where I kind of have a problem with him. And the Athletics in general haven't been a big running team either these last few years. So that's where I kind of have a little bit of concern. And when you have a crop of shortstops here that do have 20-20 potential almost everywhere, I mean, every guy we're going to talk about almost has 20-20 potential, or if they don't have 20-20 potential, they have, you know, 30 or 40 home run upside on one side. So, or it's the other way in steals. But Either way, I think that Barreto is strong. I have him as my eighth spot guy, but I don't really see the reason to have him at top three other than just proximity.
I think, and you nailed it for me, I think three through eight for me, honest to God, is splitting hairs. I've shuffled these guys in my rankings so much throughout this whole process. 9 and 10 are clear for me. They're a tier below, but 3 through 8 for me is a very strong tier, and you can't go wrong with any of these guys. We'll get to that. Who's your number three, man?
My number three is, let me look. Oh, it's Gleyber Torres.
Okay.
And we'll talk about him for a second since we already talked about Barreto, but
he's my number four. Gleyber is my number four.
Well, there you go. I think Torres has a lot of upside. I don't think it's as big as other people might think, but I still think that he's strong. He has a good frame, and he should bulk up even more. The stolen base success rate is certainly an issue for me, but he has enough speed, in my opinion, to steal 20 bases. His walk rate jumped back up to 11% and 12% in his two stops last year, and he posted a career-best 81% contact rate and 122 at-bats in high-A Tampa when he got traded over to the Yankee system. He's just another potential 2020 guy with a 270-plus average. I think that that's strong, and I agree with your assessment that maybe 3 through 8 is a little bit interchangeable, but I like Yankee Stadium. I like the division that he's going to be playing in, and I think he's good enough, even if he isn't the best defensive shortstop. Didi Gregorius probably won't be there by the time Torres is really ready and mature enough to take the shortstop position from him. So I think that he is safe enough to pencil in at shortstop for at least the beginning of his career, which leaves you, 4 or 5 in the next few years here of him being a shortstop candidate for you and at least filling that spot.
Yeah, my report's pretty similar. I mean, I'll just come out and say it how I think Torres is overrated in fantasy circles, and that's not a knock on him. I just think I keep seeing lists where he's top 5, even top 10 overall, and I think that's kind of crazy. I have him 19, so I mean, I'm not down on him completely, but I mean, just hear me out on this. I think with shortstop being this deep and his upside being, for me, 280 with 15-20 homers, 15-20 steals, that's good. It's not great, though. I know that sounds weird, but with the level of play for shortstop now, it's not. You know what I'm saying?
Part of my analysis, too, with some of these guys, because we're looking at these prospects, but we don't know the type of lineups that they'll be in.
And yeah, that's
at
true.
Least with Torres, something that I'm kind of putting in there with him or putting into his projection is the fact that he's going to be playing in Yankee Stadium, and the system itself has improved so much that I can see the Yankees having a high or above average offense by the time he's promoted. So that's kind of part of it. Like, you can't really put in the run and RBI numbers with guys like this, at least right now, because we don't know what type of lineups they'll be in. But for me personally, I think that the Yankees will be much improved offensively by the time Torres does make his debut to the majors. And that kind of factors in a bit for me.
Yeah. Torres he's one of those guys. I completely agree with what you're saying. And I guess part of the reason why I have him behind Barreto is proximity, number one, for Barreto. And number two, as I think I'm a little different on you, I think Didi Gregorius is going to be there for the long haul for New York. I think he's a guy. And I'm not sure.
He definitely helps.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if Torres is going to push him off short. I mean, Torres, I've seen scouting reports. I mean, they say he's comparable to Javi Baez on defense, which is nuts. That's like, he's that good.
That's the case. Baez is a top 10 percentile defender.
Yeah, they said Torres's hands are just as quick as stuff I've been reading and stuff I've been seeing. I mean, the swing is lightning quick, so it makes kind of makes sense. But he lacks the big plus tool for me, just is what Torres does. And I think winning the Arizona Fall League MVP kind of pushed him way high on people's lists. So I'm still in love with him, but I'm not in love with him, if you know what I mean.
I think I'm higher than you on him. I mean, based on my rank, I am. But at the same time, I don't think that his upside should be that of Brendan Rodgers. I think Rodgers has higher upside long term. But, we'll see with Torres. I think that a lot of people will probably take him higher in a startup dynasty now than you would, and probably higher than I would, too, personally. But I think that, the upside is certainly there, and the hype is warranted.
Sure, yeah, clearly. I guess he's my number four, so who's your number four, Mike?
My number four is, I'm being a little bit of a homer here, but it's Willie Adames.
He's on my list coming up here soon, too, so don't sweat it. Yeah. I love him, too.
I like him a lot. He is the best position prospect we've had since Evan Longoria, in my opinion, down in Tampa Bay. His he has a strong walk rate across all levels. He still does strike out a little bit too much for me, but he should sit around the 25% mark when he reaches his peak. His batting average floor should be around 260, but I expect him to be more of a 270, 280 hitter. But in on-base percentage formats, he certainly gets a tick up. I think that he's a 2015 type of guy at his peak as well. He had 11 home runs, which is a career high last year, and his speed is good enough to, you know, probably steal within 12 to 15, maybe 18 bases. He had 13 last year in Double-A. So I like this skill set. I think he's another guy that if he did have a career year, it might be 2020-ish, maybe 25-10, something like that. But I love the build. I love the fact that he has strong plate skills. He does strike out, and he's a little bit of a free swinger. But he could be promoted at the end of this season. The proximity is close, and the pedigree is there as well. So I love Adames.
Yeah, I do too. Like I said, 3-8 for me was splitting hairs. And Adames for me fell 7th. And the only knock, I agree with everything you're saying, I'm not as high on the hit tool as you. I think it's only average, and I say only average as a slight. It should never be. But I think compared to other guys on this list, I think the hit tool is a tad lower. I do think he sticks it short. Everything you said, man, I think he's a – I mean, I guess I could see a couple years of where he hits 300. I don't buy it. He's more of a 18 to 20 homer guy with lots of doubles, which is great. He evolved as a hitter. He used to be a strictly pull guy, and last year he showed signs of hitting the balls to all field. He's a 20-year-old, and he played in Double-A. He was over 4 years younger than the average player. He set career highs in doubles, homers, and steals last year for himself. The arm is strong. He's a smooth defensive player. He might lack the range for short, which it's okay. In Tampa, they don't really have another middle infield option. He can move to second base if they had to, but I think they're going to do everything they can to keep him at the six. Above average defensive skills, average speed, above average pop, plus hit. Lots to like here with Adames, but like I said, splitting hairs, I probably should have him a spot higher. He's literally one spot behind J.P. Crawford in my overall ranking, so obviously he's one spot behind Crawford here for me. I have Adames 7.
No problems with that. Who do you have at 5?
5, Ahmed Rosario, the Mets.
I have him at 6, so we can talk about him.
Yeah, go ahead if you don't mind.
Well, I like him a lot. My worry with him is that he might not ever be a 15-plus home run guy, which is what my ideal scenario for him would be. But he's starting to build on his small frame because he is a slender guy. I think right now he's up to 190, but he's like 6'2".
Yeah.
The power was a little bit more apparent last season. I'm hoping that it starts to trend upwards continuously as he grows. He is getting a little bit older, so that still is starting to worry me a bit. But he is a great – his hit tool is above average. His plate skills are great. I think that his speed is good enough to steal 15 to 20 bases a year. But I do think the safest thing about him is his batting average. I think he can be a 285, 290 hitter perennially. And he should fill a spot for the Mets fairly quickly as well. It might not be this year, but early next year for sure, I think that we could see Rosario in the majors, which, you know, should play a lot into your projections on guys. So I think that Rosario is a safe bet to make the major leagues, and also is a safe bet to continue to grow into his frame, because if he does build on that, then I think that we could see a bigger fantasy guy as opposed to just more of an average player right now.
Yeah, I think you're spot on here. The reason why I wanted to lead with Rosario is you called me out for Barreto, how I've evolved myself personally, and I like Barreto a little more.
Because I feel like last year this time we were talking about Rosario the way we talked about Barreto, or we were talking about Barreto the same way we're talking about Rosario now.
Yes, I agree with that. I guess in my report I even wrote it. My tune has changed a little bit on Rosario the past year. And I don't think you can be someone, I call myself a prospect evaluator or prospect analyst. I don't think you can be someone like this without being able to change your mind on players. You know what I mean? Players evolve, they change, skills get better, they improve, they worsen. Player development isn't a linear thing. And originally going into last year, if you asked me about Rosario, I would have told you, really good defensive player, questionable bat. But now I think he's a gold glove candidate. And I think that he has an above average hit tool. I think he's going to read strong batting averages using that speed to flirt with 300 in his prime. And I think he's going to steal 25, 30 bases. And I think, I mean, the power projection isn't that elite. I think 8 to 10 is probably realistic. But I mean, there's a lot to love here. And if you're in real baseball, I think Rosario is a top 10 prospect. But in fantasy realms, I think he falls in the 35 or in about the 30 to 40 range, which is where I have him at. So
his defense is something I didn't mention, but it's definitely plus for him. He's
that's
the type of guy that won't move from the position, and he's going to be above average there as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to love on the defensive end. I mean, I know that's not a fantasy thing, but in reality, it really is, because where these guys play positionally is a large percentage of their value. So you can't throw out the defense, and you've heard us talk on all these podcasts before. We value defense a lot, and I think that's really good. And you need just, and everyone is as a dynasty league, you need to pay attention to that too. So I think it needs to be part of every dynasty scouting report you read on a player. You need to read about the defense, because if he's not going to play shortstop, if someone like Rosario's offensive potential isn't a shortstop, he's not as valuable even in fantasy. You know what I mean? If he has to move to the outfield. So you need to pay attention to that stuff.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that, because a lot of times we as fantasy players get so focused on the fact that somebody hits with this profile or has this type of speed profile, but we never really concentrate on the fact that they might not stick at a certain position. There's a couple guys on this list even that if they move, their profile doesn't seem nearly as good. But it's just something that we as a community, I think, need to monitor more and more. And I think as a fantasy industry, people are starting to focus on that a little bit more as well. So I don't think it's just completely something that people are forgetting about. Anyways, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was on mute. I was trying to talk. I said, I think it's, I do that like once a podcast.
Once a show.
Yeah. That's my one.
Andy's laughing at you while he's listening to this.
He probably is. And I'm laughing at him because he's taking train selfies. But I'm glad we mentioned that, because we bring that up on this show a lot. So, and it's been getting a lot better in the fantasy realm for the last year, 2 years. People are starting to notice that. So it's a valid thing to bring up. So.
All right, let's before we go to the second half of the list, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Coming soon from the minds that gave you the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Fantasy Sports Podcasts is a new venture, Survivor, Friends with Fantasy Benefits style.
All right, let's move on to number six. I don't know if you mentioned your number six guy yet or not.
I did not, and it's the ever elusive. This was the hardest guy for me to rank in this fantasy list. I want to be completely honest with you. J.P. Crawford is my number six guy.
I have him at number seven, and people probably are like, why the hell do these guys have him at six or seven? He might be promoted this year. So give your simple reason as to why.
You've heard this phrase a lot. He's a lot better real life player than fantasy prospect. His best skill is the defense. He's 150% going to stay at shortstop. And it's his best skill. The ability to get on base is, and that's another thing too. His people typically, I think we're starting to get away from it. I think OBP is starting to become the preferred method over batting average, but a lot of people still play in standard 5x5s, and Crawford doesn't carry as much value in those formats either. He's a really strong on base guy. So if you play it on OBP formats, bump him up a spot or two on this list. But I think the high contact, the superstar defense, Gold Glove caliber, and the high walk rate give Crawford a really, really high floor, which is extremely valuable if you play in deeper formats. But he doesn't have the upside that a lot of these other guys on this list have. I think absolute peak, which I do not think he hits because it's absolute peak for a reason, 300 average, 15 homers, 15 steals. I think he falls short of that in all facets and ends with, in peak years, Gold Glove defense, 280, 290 average, 10 home runs and 15 steals. It sounds like, again, it goes back to this. If he was an outfielder, he might be more valuable because you got to have three or four or five of them on your roster. But as a shortstop, with how deep this is, it's kind of insane to say that might not be a top. That might not be rosterable, startable in 12-team formats.
Guess who the 20th shortstop was last year in fantasy, just off the top of your head?
I'll go with Freddie Galvis. I don't know.
Well, Freddie Galvis was 17th, but that's what I'm saying here. 20th was Addison Russell. 22nd was Troy Tulowitzki.
So I'm way too high. Yeah, so he might not.
24th was Jed Jorko, and he hit 23 home runs and hit 252. Or
Jorko hit 30 homers.
No,
yeah.
He hit 30 homers and hit 243. Sorry, I was looking at a projection. For
he hit 23 in the second half.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, my thing with Crawford is, like, if you watch Crawford, if you actually look at him and watch him play, he's a dynamic defender. I mean, he will be a great war player because he will be – he's like Kevin Kiermaier, but at shortstop. I mean, he's a stud.
That's a good comp, actually, with the numbers, too. To be honest, that's a perfect comp.
The thing with Kiermaier, though, is he's actually starting to get that pull power going a bit, and the stolen bases, I think, were already kind of comparable. They both are speedsters out there on the field and in the batter's box as well. But the only reason I have Crawford on my list, on my top 10 list, is because he is going to make the major leagues, and there's no doubt about that. And his plate skills are exceptional, and we both know how much we both love plate skills. Mm-hmm. It's something we always just kind of drool over. And Crawford, I love that about him. He doesn't strike out. He walks a ton. My problem is, as much as he is a walks guy and an OBP formats, he's certainly going to get a bump up. I just don't see, even if he gets on base a ton, you know, say 36% of the time, I don't think that equates to more than 20 stolen bases. And his power just is too fringe for me to bank on anything double digit wise. And if I'm drafting a baseball team, I usually don't draft guys that excel in just batting average and runs scored, which is pretty much what he's going to do. He's going to give you a few stolen. He's a three category guy. And that's, if you can stomach a guy like that, then I'm okay with somebody like Crawford. But I typically like to go for guys that offer me five category production. If they don't offer five category production, they excel in power.
Yeah, and to bring back your point about Gleyber Torres, I think one benefit for Crawford is I think it's pretty safe to project the Phillies are going to have a strong lineup in a few years, and I think Crawford has a good chance to bat at the top of that lineup.
Absolutely, yeah.
But he also has a good chance to hit eighth. So it's, you know what I mean? So you can't really...
I would say he bats first because of his on-base percentage.
Yeah, sure. I just think the lack of power, he's going to... I think pitchers might knock the bat out of his hand, so to speak.
Yeah. Which is maybe right now, but I think as he matures, he...
Yeah, no, I agree with that. There. Yeah.
I think It just comes down to your preference, and it's really hard for me to prefer a guy. You know, how many shortstops scored 100 runs last year? Let's check it out. So last year we had three shortstops, and that includes Manny Machado score 100 runs. The two other ones were Xander Bogaerts and Corey Seager. Xander Bogaerts ended up as the fourth shortstop on the board, and Corey Seager ended up number seven. Seager hit, 26 home runs and batted 300 and scored those 100 runs. That ended up with him being number seven. And then you had Xander Bogaerts hit somewhere in the vicinity of 21 home runs, and he batted 294 with 115 runs scored, as well as 13 stolen bases, and that put him at number four on the ESPN player rater.
That is crazy how deep that position is.
Yeah, so J.P. Crawford, even if he does what we think he's going to do, which is, you know, say in 2 years from now he scores 100 runs and he hits seven home runs, you know, drives in, 40, 50, and then has, you know, 21 steals, that's still... is going to put him outside of the top 15 shortstops.
Yeah, likely. Pretty comfortably, I would think.
Yeah, probably outside the top 20, but I'm trying to be a little bit on the bright side with him here. So, again, at the end of the day, the upside just isn't there, and I think because of his prospect pedigree, he's going to end up being a guy that some people in your league like more than they should.
Yeah, take advantage of the guys that look at the Baseball America lists and not the prospect lists, and not the fantasy lists.
He's kind of a Francisco Lindor light, because I don't see Crawford getting 15 home runs like Lindor did this last year. But I do think the runs, the batting average, and the stolen bases could be the same.
I can't argue with that, but I'll let someone else gamble on that.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't want to just keep bashing a guy that I think is going to be a 15-year major leaguer. But for fantasy, I'm kind of out.
Yeah, I think that's the way to say it. We love the player, but if I was a real life GM, I'd be all over him. But as a fantasy GM, I'm eh. I'll just say eh.
Yeah. And I actually didn't go over my number five guy, so we'll go over him real fast. And I'm sure you have him somewhere in the vicinity of your list here. But fan favorite between you and I, Ehsan Diaz. I do.
Okay, he makes mine. He's number 10 on my list.
We didn't mention him last week on the show, but I'd say it's like an 80% possibility he shifts over to second base.
Agreed, but our to keep it simple, and and stop the debates, we decided at what position they're currently playing, just to make it easy.
And right now, Diaz is playing short, so we will keep him there. But there is a – if you are drafting Diaz or you have him already, there is a very, very rich possibility that he ends up, you know, sticking at second base. The pro to that, though, is that he is Robinson Cano 2.0. If you watch him swing, the swing is identical to Robinson Cano.
It really is.
And the power is damn close. He has 279 and 205 ISOs over the last two minor league seasons. He does still strike out too much. Even last year with a 71% contact rate, though, he ended up having a 264 batting average. He has, however, posted 11% walk rate or better at every stop, and he has a 30-plus home run profile for me. So somebody like Diaz, the plate skills do need to get better. More specifically, the strikeout rate needs to get better, but I do love the home run power. I think that he has every bit of the same power tool as Brendan Rodgers, who we have at number one and number two, and he, for me, is at number five. He is probably going to play second base, but in my opinion, this is Robinson Cano 2.0. Milwaukee is an amazing place to hit, and I love the guy. So,
yeah, I'm going to gush on Diaz myself. I have him – this is how deep the shortstop position is. I have Diaz as a 10th player on my list, and he's 49th on my prospect list overall. That's insane. I have 10 shortstops in the top 50. You can't argue with any of these guys, really. I mean, you look at Diaz, you nailed it. His swing, he is trying to mimic Robinson Cano, and he does a pretty good job of it. He's done nothing but hit. The Diamondbacks came up and traded for, I believe it was Segura, right, to the Brewers. And
yeah,
it
was a Segura deal.
Yep, and we both love Vanderbilt, and Diaz is a Vanderbilt commit in 20. But the D-backs drafted him in this competitive balance round and got him away from that. Can you imagine Ehsan Diaz and Dansby Swanson up the middle for Vanderbilt at the same time? Because that's what it would have been. And you mentioned the Cano comp with the swing, and you also mentioned that's the ceiling, and I have that exactly word for word in my report. So the swing looks identical to Cano's mechanically, and he's actually drawn that lofty comp as an absolute ceiling. What he's done in the pitching-heavy Midwest League with a 25% strikeout rate is downright amazing. 264, 358, 469 with 20 homers, 34 doubles, which is big for me because that points to more power, 5 triples, and 11 steals.
And he led the Midwest League in home runs, if I'm not mistaken, last year.
I would think 20 is – it's a pitching-heavy league. And to put this in perspective, everyone loves Eloy Jimenez's power, right? Eloy played the entire year in the Midwest League last year. He had 14 home runs. Diaz hit 20.
Yeah, Diaz actually led the Midwest in home runs and in ISO.
Yeah, as a shortstop for now. I think the upside is, I think the average is capped with the strikeout rate. The walk rate is strong. So again, OBP formats bump them up a little bit, but I think 260 is a reasonable expectation for average. And I have 20 to 30 home runs to be safe. I think if he arrives in, like you said, Miller Park's a sweet place to hit, I think he's an easy 30 homer bat. And that is insane to me to have number 10 on my list. So
yeah, I love me some Diaz. I have him on my Friends with Fantasy Benefits team. I can't really stop loving him, so that's where I'm at with him.
Ehsan Diaz or Javi Baez for the next decade? Who you got?
How dare you? How dare you? I'm not even going to make a pick because
I don't know who I would pick either.
I'm already sweating thinking about it.
Got to pick one of your man crushes, so Mickey, put you on the gun.
So we went through six. My number seven is Crawford. Who's your number seven?
My number seven is Willy Adames.
All right, we already talked about Adames at a pretty lengthy level, so how about number eight for you?
This is an interesting pick. I'm probably going to get a little shit for this one, but Kevin Maitan is my number eight.
Why would I give you shit for that? He is also on my list. He is my 10th guy just because I don't have any real minor league data on him yet, but I love me some Maitan, so give me your reasons why he's at eight.
Well, he's only 16, so that puts him down.
Is he 17 now?
I believe he might be 17 now, but switch hitting, Venezuelan import. He was regarded as a generational talent, and obviously that word doesn't get thrown around too much. The comps I saw all over him when he got signed was Chipper Jones and Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's any I don't think I need to go on any farther. I will say he's not going to be a shortstop, but again, that's what he's signed as. He's probably going to play third base. But with him, it does not matter because he's going to be a top two, top two round fantasy asset once he gets to the majors. It's going to be a while because he's 16 or 17, trying to figure that out right now. But it's going to take a long time, but it's going to pay off. So Kevin Maitan, and he's an interesting case in supplement drafts this year for our Dynasty League. I'm willing to see – we have a 20-team Dynasty League for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. I'm willing to see where Maitan gets drafted in that league this year because you know he will, but I don't know if people are patient enough. It'll be interesting.
Full disclosure, I'm actually trying to make a trade mid-podcast right now with one of our guys because our keeper deadline is approximately 1 minute from
right now.
And I'm trying to trade away Alan Hansen. So sorry about that. But
oh, you're fine.
As far as Maitan goes, this is what I've written down. And I've seen him a couple times video-wise. And the guy is, I mean, he's got to be upwards of 6'3", maybe 6'2".
He's a man child. Yeah.
And the body is great. He's a switch hitter. When you, this is, again, what I wrote down. Switch hitter plus hit slash power from both sides will take a while. But when Chipper Jones is being thrown out as a possible comp, he deserves to be on the list. And that's simply what I wrote down for him. Because at the end of the day, when people are throwing out those type of comps, that's something you need to take notice of. And I think Maitan, the name is great too. Can you associate like a great baseball player with the name Kevin Maitan? It's really easy
yeah,
to say.
I love it. Yeah. And I'm not going to even try to throw out numbers because he's only 16. But just use your imagination. And those numbers are within reach, I promise you. So,
yeah, maybe not a big speed guy, and he's probably not going to stay in the position. No. But in me saying that, I don't have anything to base that off of because he hasn't played one lick of the minors yet. So
just going, you know, just looking at body projection. I'm using my own analysis here. I don't think he sticks at short. He looks like he's going to be too big, but hey, there's bigger guys that have played short. A-Rod played short for a long time. He's a bigger dude. I think my time's going to get a little thicker, which is fine. But when you hit 330 home runs is a Miguel Cabrera they're throwing out there. So yeah.
I think that a lot of lists are going to have him fairly high. You know, I'm trying to look for him right now on a couple of lists just to like, you know, get a little baseline. Where do you have him on your overall list?
41, right behind, 41. For perspective, he's right behind Derek Fisher and right ahead of Corey Ray, your boy.
Well, he is number 100 on the BP list. And
I don't want to go at BP, but I think that's just a 100. Like, what does that mean? Like, did you just including him to include him?
Probably.
Like, because he can't be 100. Like, if he's going to be on your list, he needs to be high because of the upside. And if you're going to rank him that low, you just leave him off and say, hey, he's only 16. And you can't argue with that either. But, like, you can't have him on the list toward the end because that doesn't make any sense.
He's 87 on another list I just looked at, and I am trying to find him on one of the other outlets here. I'm not trying to give away the list I just looked at because that's a paid site, and I don't want to
ruffle
any feathers. But I actually don't see him on the top 100 of another list. So, you know, you're definitely higher than the consensus on him.
I have a lot of younger guys higher. You'll find out in my outfield podcast and in our third baseman one. I got a couple teenagers
outliers.
Pretty high. Yeah, but
now,
I think
this list has Eason Diaz number 99, and they can go to hell.
Yeah, see, it's already garbage, right?
It's already. I'm not even going to list. I'm not going to read that list ever again in my lifetime. So
I have Diaz 49. So don't hate me.
I will never hate you for that. That's. I mean, he should be a top 50 prospect. Anyways, moving on. So we love some Kevin Maitan at number 8. I have Barreto at number 8. I think I already mentioned that. Who's your number 9 shortstop, Matt?
Jorge Mateo for the Yankees.
We match.
Oh, sweet.
What do you have written down for him?
Well, here's what I got with Mateo. It's crazy. He's the fifth prospect in the Yankee system. That's how deep that system is. He had a rough 2016, man. He went from coming into the season, he was looked at as the shortstop of the future for the Yankees. And now, and then he in the middle of the season, he gets suspended for 2 weeks. They trade for their real shortstop of the future. Now they're talking about him playing second base or even center field now. So I think that is kind of rough. He got suspended, like I said, because he was questioning management for calling up players that he deemed worse than him, which I think is outstanding. I love players like that. confidence is a should be a tool. I love it. But
cockiness isn't a tool.
Yeah, no, it's not. But I think Mateo, I don't think he lasts in the Yankee system. I think he gets traded, which is good. I think that's good for him. I do think he moves to center field. If you remember, Billy Hamilton was a shortstop prospect at one time too. And I think Mateo can be, he's got dynamic speed. It's pure 80 grade. He can play anywhere on the diamond with it. I think he becomes a better hitter than Billy Hamilton is now. And I think yeah, he's not going to be as efficient on the bases, and he's not going to be an elite center fielder like Hamilton is, but I think, honest to God, 60 stolen bases is well within reach here for Mateo if he gets the regular time. He just needs to hit enough, and I think eventually he will. He might get out of the gate slow. We've seen speed guys like Peraza not struggle out of the gate until he gets a chance. Billy Hamilton's starting to put it together a little bit. Not that Mateo is Hamilton, but I think he can be pretty close, and I think he can hit better. He's Hamilton with a better hit tool, but not as much steals. So
I think the only comparisons to Hamilton is that they're fast, like, honestly, because
That's fair.
Mateo's tools are much louder. He definitely has a better hit tool. I think that he could hit 280 consistently if things broke right with him. I also think that he could develop into double-digit home run power for, you know, a few seasons at least. I mean, he's already starting to trend that way in the minor leagues. 40-plus stolen bases at maturity, I absolutely agree with. I mean, just when you're looking at these guys like Billy Hamilton, D. Gordon, who are massive, you know, fantasy commodities right now because of their speed, you have a guy in Mateo that can definitely equate or have the same batting average as both of them, maybe better in Hamilton's case and not as good in D. Gordon's, because D. Gordon has a couple of years there where he was in the 290 realm. But he definitely has better pop than both of them combined,
I agree
really.
With that.
And while he might not steal 50-60 in a year, it's definitely possible. And I think that 40 is certainly where we can kind of sit him. It's kind of the sweet spot for him.
I think is it fair to say, I'm kind of spitballing off this, and we didn't talk about this at all, but I think, now obviously not positioned because Marte's an outfielder, but you think Starling Marte is a reasonable projection for Mateo?
Twenty home run pop. I don't think that he's gonna hit 20 or Marte's more of a 15 to 20 guy. I think that Mateo is more of a 10 to 15 guy at peak. But I get the comparison, and I don't think that the plate skills are as good either. I know that Marte's not a rock guy, but he does make a lot of contact, and he does have good batting averages across the board. But I like the comp. I think that they're very comparable.
I think there's a bit of a buy low window here on Mateo, to be honest. So I think that's another thing that's worth pursuing for you dynasty players out there. I think people are down on him across the board. I mean, you read my first sentence in my report is it was a tumultuous year for him. I mean, you look as a guy, he was on a prospect pedestal last year. I'll put that being the heir apparent to Derek Jeter. And now all of a sudden he's a man without a position. So I think being in New York, I think there's more attention for that. And I think you can swoop in and maybe get him for fairly low price, but this is your last year to do that, so you need to do that now, because he's going to Double A next year. Double A is one phone call away from the bigs, so especially in the Yankees aren't big on pushing their guys to Triple A. So I mean, they don't need Mateo now, but he could come up, and like, he's that fast, like he's
if the Yankees made the playoffs this year, they could throw Mateo up there on the playoff roster just
absolutely
to use his speed.
Yep,
this is where Mateo, or just in general when you're looking at guys from a fantasy perspective, Mateo is your pure upside play here, because can he beat Franklin Barreto, J.P. Crawford, Ahmed Rosario, Eason Diaz, Willy Adames, even Gleyber Torres in fantasy production any given year, even Dansby Swanson?
He can.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But his floor is low.
His floor is certainly low, especially, you know, knowing that he's a little bit cocky and he gets a little bit kind of crazy out there. But at the same time, Mateo is the type of guy that I love to buy in fantasy, because a great season from him can look like, 15 home runs, 45 stolen bases, and a 280 average. That is great. And then, like I said before with Gleyber Torres, if the Yankees lineup gets better here in the next couple of years, once Clint Frazier comes up, Gleyber Torres, Jorge Mateo, and they, you know, they obviously have enough money, I think that they're the favorites for Bryce Harper here when he becomes a free agent. You're looking at a team that definitely could turn their, you know, fortunes around in terms of their overall run production. And Mateo, while he's not a leadoff hitter, he's certainly the type of guy that if he's getting good in a good lineup, he can be lethal, absolutely lethal. So you throw 100 runs on him, then you're looking at a top 3-round pick in fantasy, and that is insane upside. I think that his upside is higher
Turner
than that of Gleyber Torres. And yeah, Trey Turner is a good comp as well. A guy that can hit 15-ish, maybe 10 home runs with immense speed, decent batting average. That's what Mateo represents. And I find it weird that people are lower on him than they were on Trey Turner. Like, everybody was looking at Trey Turner like an automatic. And Mateo, I think, should be regarded in the same exact pool.
And you just heard both of us talk about Mateo, and we both have him 9. So
yeah, and I don't feel good about it. When I was doing this list, I put him 9 because I don't think it's the safest
projection. That's exactly.
I think that his proximity to the majors could be fluid. He can make it sometime at the end of this season if things broke right. He could also make it in 2019. That's how kind of crazy somebody like him.
He strikes me as an up and down guy for when he gets started. You know what I mean? He'll be kind of riding the shuttle from Scranton Wilkes-Barre to Yankee Stadium kind of his first year a couple times. But I think once he gets settled in, it might take a bit, but once you get settled in, you're going to love him. So yeah. I agree with that.
And even major league guys like Greg Bird and Starlin Castro, those guys could be beneficiaries to some of these younger guys that could be coming up here in the next coming years in terms of their run and RBI production. So I like Mateo and Gleyber Torres a lot at the shortstop position. I know that what would be the best case scenario for Mateo is that he is able to get 20 games at shortstop in the majors, which I think is not going to happen. I mean, I don't know if you and I have really made that clear, but I do think he's going to move positions. He's probably going to be a center fielder, maybe a middle infielder. I don't know where his final destination is, but I don't think it's shortstop because I do think that Torres is good enough to play that position, or Didi Gregorius if they go that route. But he could be traded as well. If his cockiness kind of gets him in trouble, they could ship him off. I mean, we've seen the Yankees ship off some guys, so.
Yep, I do think, I kind of said that, mentioned that earlier too. I think he gets traded, and if he gets traded, it's really, really good for him because it gives him a better chance of staying on the dirt, and that's where he's going to have more value. So, I'm with you.
Best case scenario would be Milwaukee because we know that they'll let him run every single second.
Bark twice if you're in Milwaukee, Jorge.
All right, are we on number 10 yet? I think we're on.
We are. 10
now.
Our penultimate.
I have Kevin my ten there. Where do you who do you have at number 10 there?
If I can speak. I signed Diaz.
Oh yeah, you already mentioned him. So let's move on to our honorable mentions. I don't have any of these in any particular order. So I'll just kind of full disclosure. I have 6 guys on this list.
Okay.
So I know it's a little bit longer, but I knew that Andy wasn't going to be on, so you and I could kind of dive into it a little bit more. But I have Kevin Newman as my top honorable mention. Again, it's in no particular order, but he was the first guy that I thought of putting on here. How about you?
Delvin Perez for me.
I also had Delvin Perez on my list. Why don't you give us some Kevin Newman talks first?
Kevin Newman, I think, is a guy that's going to come up this. He could come up this in second half for Pittsburgh. I think he's the ultimate high floor guy. He's a little bit of Joe Panic, but he can play shortstop. Yes, it's not that exciting, but in a 20-team league, you'll take it because you got middle infield spots to fill. You got bench spots to fill. Injury replacements are not going to be easy to find in leagues like that. So I do think Kevin Newman carries a lot of value in your deeper formats. He's a really strong he doesn't strike out, and that's the big skill here. But the hit tool is a 70, the power is a 30. So I think that's fair. 280, 290, plenty of runs hitting on top of the order with 10 to 12 steals and 6 to 8 home runs.
Yeah, I don't think the power is going to play, but what I love the most and why he's on my list is simply because 90-plus contact rate in every stop in the minor leagues. He actually improved his walk rate to 10% last year in 233 at-bats at AA. He had a 9% walk rate in 164 at-bats in high-A Bradenton as well. But I just think that he's going to get promoted this year, and that is my reason for having him in the honorable mentions.
So. That I like that too. I think he comes up in September. I agree.
Yeah.
I guess Delvin Perez, you want to talk about him?
Yeah, we can talk about Perez. What pick was he this year in the draft? I know
23.
Since he was a St. Louis Cardinal.
Fell to 23. I think everyone knows why, but
Well, tell everybody in case they don't know.
Well, all right. He was regarded as a top 5 pick.
And then
coming into the draft.
The drug test.
Failed the PED test. It was a PED test. Yep.
Because he's taking those horse tranquilizers, like we told him not to.
Somebody's giving him bad advice down there, but he's only 17 years old.
I wonder
so.
If Alex Reyes' weed dealer was the one that supplied him with the steroids.
Hey, I want to keep this off the record, but I'm giving all my 17-year-old steroids if I can help it. So
I don't know who would give you 17-year-olds in the first place, but...
Yeah, that's also a valid point, and we should probably talk more about Perez now. I guess with Perez, 17 years old, made a bad decision. Okay. A lot of the comps he gets, I think mostly just because he's from Puerto Rico, he gets Lindor and Correa comps. I think the Correa comp is ridiculous. I don't think he's that type of player at all.
No.
Lindor is okay comp. I could see that. Perez plus speed plus raw power, which doesn't mean it's going to project a game. It should be average in game for shortstop, which is good. The defensive skills are elite. He's smooth, super quick, lightning quick hands, really good arm. In the GCL this year, as a 17-year-old, I want to make this clear, 17-year-old, he hit 294, 352, 393, and he went 12 for 13 in stolen bases playing against kids that graduated college this year. So the league average for the league was 241, 319, 336, and he destroyed that. I dinged him a little bit for being so far away. In deeper leagues, I'm making the investment. But I do think he's going to have strong batting averages, 30 steals, 12 to 15 homer upside. But I kind of think you fast forward 2 to 3 years, I think you're looking at J.P. Crawford 2.0. So.
Well, I hope he's a little better than that. I don't think he'll ever walk the same as Crawford, but he does make great contact, which is what we love to see in fantasy. I hope the power comes around, because the power can come around, and I'm not talking like 30 home runs or something, but more so like 15.
I got 12 to 15. Yep, that's what I projected.
Yeah, yep. And I think that we can see a really nice quality shortstop here. I do think that the stolen bases can be upwards of 25 to 30 if things broke right with him. The Cardinals, this is like your prototypical Cardinals player, right? Like strong defensively, should be able to steal some bags. I know you said that they
typically
want to be more
athletic. Typically it's not. They typically don't draft guys with this upside. It's the first year for that scouting director, Randy Flores, former left-handed relief pitcher.
Yeah, but these are like defense. That's more what I'm meaning. They like guys that are good defenders, and that's what I think Perez is. I think he's more of an athletic defender first.
He's definitely defense first, yes.
But he's good in terms of the plate skills, and that's what we love to see. Obviously very early in his development, so if he sets the world on fire this next season, then he will probably rise up prospect list. At least for now, though, I think he's an honorable mention. He probably will be drafted in our, you know, reload dynasty draft that we do. We keep 25 players, 20-team league. He probably will be a top 2-round pick, more than likely, somewhere in that vicinity. I wouldn't be surprised.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of gives you a barometer in which to value him if you're in a very deep league like that.
Sure, and it's got to be patience required, but I think it's going to be worth the wait. I guess my next two, I kind of like lumping these two together. My next two honorable mentions, I'm going with the young guns, Bo Bichette and Fernando Tatis Jr.
I have both of them on my honorable mentions. Bo Bichette.
Oh, I love Bo. I'm the high man on Bo.
Absolutely irrational about him.
I love him. I love him. I love him. I love him. He elevates everything. He's extremely aggressive offensive player. He has easy 25 home run pop due to the plus bat speed, the strength, double plus raw power, a mature on base approach. Average speed is a nice little token to throw in there. One of the best high school hitters the state of Florida has ever seen. Went to the GCL and get this, 82 at bats, so sound the small sample size alarms and sirens and everything. But 427, 451, 732, 9 doubles, 2 triples, 4 homers, and 3 for 3 on the bases and 82 at bats.
Absolutely sick. Absolutely sick.
And doesn't get cheated, swings for the fence every time, and I'm very excited for this because I live in the Midwest. I'm around the Midwest League. Next year in Lansing is going to be Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. on the same team.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to be absolutely bonkers. And this is me. I don't know if it's something that I need to maybe work on when I'm doing fantasy analysis, but I always am inclined to believe more in the guys that are, you know, former player sons, just because you know that they're getting, like,
I think
the
there's
top,
something to that.
They're getting top level training. They're getting all of the, you know, they're playing in the best environments as well. They're playing
even
AAU
little
ball,
things like
and they're
growing
playing
up around clubhouses is a benefit. Having a dad that knows what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, and it's in your genes, you know. I mean, Dante Bichette was a quality baseball player for a long time. So Bo Bichette naturally will have some of those genes in him. And then on top of that, you're getting unlimited resources because of income, because of status, and being able to play wherever the hell you want. I mean, getting the top training in the world, more than likely. I think that that's part of the reason why I'm so tantalized by somebody like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as well, and other guys that are former players' sons. It's just something I've always kind of given a little bit more credence to them, and maybe I shouldn't, but I just always have given, I've been a little bit more inspired by guys like that just because of the fact that I know they're getting the top of the level training.
Yeah, and I guess now is a perfect segue to get to another one of those guys who we lumped with them, Tatis Jr., right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is an A.J. Preller masterstroke here. He not only did he get the White Sox to take James Shields, he got the White Sox to throw them Tatis and take on Shields. So imagine that, right? Double plus power projection, 24 extra base hits in only 55 games.
He's Dominican.
18 years old.
He's Dominican.
Soundly, Fernando Tatis is his father. Soundly, the pedigree alarm. That I will say on a random note, his father did the most impressive thing I've ever seen on a baseball field. Two grand slams in the same inning off the same pitcher. So Chan Ho Park was the victim.
Wow. But I totally forgot about Chan Ho Park. That's like,
yes, I think a lot of people did.
Early baseball watching time.
Me too. The question with Tatis is the hit tool. He's only 18. The swing is long. He's going to strike out a lot. He's probably not going to play third. Probably not going to play short. He's going to move to third. Bichette is also, who we talked about earlier, probably not going to stick it short. He'll probably move to second. But both of these guys hit enough. They need to be rostered in really deep formats because they have the upside. I'm scooping up Bichette and Tatis wherever I can. And Tatis and Bichette just missed my top 100. Bichette is 103. And I believe Tatis is in the 110 range. So they're definitely going to be top 100 guys for me next year, assuming they make progression. So not a lot of people are talking about Tatis Jr., so get on that train if you can.
If I'm comparing the two or I'm valuing the two, I'm definitely going Bichette over Tatis. But I think that Tatis has a ton of upside in his own right. So definitely two great names to, you know, stash away. I certainly am targeting both of them in this draft that is coming up for us. So, you know, I know you knew that anyways, Matt, but
yeah, the funny thing is I make these lists for me and I just put them on the website. So
I'll mention on here after these two is Nick Gordon. I have him as a honorable mention on this list. He was a top 50 prospect coming into last year, and really nothing's changed for me. He's never going to be a home run guy, but I think that he has a natural, you know, 20 to 25 or 30 stolen base upside. If he were to make the major leagues, he makes strong contact, doesn't strike out a ton, which is what you need to see from a guy that, you know, weighs 140 pounds soaking wet and is very long and lean. But I do think he makes the major leagues sometime in the next couple of years here. He was only in high A in 2016, so he likely will be in double A for the majority of this season. Yeah, hopefully he gets a promotion to AAA at some point this year, but probably not. He'll probably stick in AA. But I do think that he's a 25-30 stolen base guy, should hit for a solid batting average. And, you know, while that's not really the most inspiring profile, I think it does play, and he should be an honorable mention.
He's in my honorable mention list. I'll cut my list, but, I mean, I second everything you said. He's not the most exciting, flashy fantasy guy, but sometimes you don't have to be. He's going a lot. You're not paying J.P. Crawford price for Nick Gordon, and they're not that much different in the upside for fantasy. OBP for Crawford's better, but Nick Gordon, the hardest thing people don't realize is he's not D. He's not going to steal 50 bases. He doesn't have that kind of speed, but he's still a good player in his all right. He's got more power, so he's a good player in his own right. I guess I have a list of like 10 guys. I'll just mention two more because we'll be here all night. Your boy Adrian Rondon for the Rays.
And, yeah, I don't have him on my list. I don't know why. I'm not really.
It's because it's deep. Right now. I skipped over a bunch of guys. For full disclosure, I'm skipping over Anderson Tejada, Mauricio Dubon, Luis Almanzar, Yu Chang, and Richard Urena and Christian Arroyo. But I do want to touch on Rondon for a minute because I think he's got a little bit of power and can stick at shortstop. He's far away, of course. And I love my teenagers, so I'm also going to stick with Miguel Angel Sierra from the Astros. I think the power for Sierra is absolutely the truth. He's extremely far away, 19, Venezuelan kid, slugged 430 in two in rookie ball and low A. Didn't hit for much average, but being only 19, I'm going to take the shot here. He's a really good defensive player, should stick there. Freduis Nova is another guy, eons away. He's an international guy this year with Almanzar. Draft those guys in really deep leagues because they'll pay off for you. But we can go on forever with these guys, man. I have a ton of honorable mentions, but hit me up on Twitter for more.
Same here. I have a lot of the same ones. Almanzar is certainly one of them. I have Urena, even though he's not the most inspiring option. I have Arroyo as well. I mean,
I kind of like Arroyo, and I can't – he doesn't have upside. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
I really like Arroyo. he just fits that Giants mold, man. I wish I could give better fantasy advice than that, but I just have a gut feeling that he's going to be like Matt Duffy or like Joe Panic or even Brandon Crawford on offense and just kind of take off when he gets to the majors. 36 yeah. doubles in double A, that points to more power. Yeah, the speed's not there, but for a lot of those guys, it wasn't either, and they're still turning into valuable assets. I mean, he's going to be boring, but he's going to be a kind of guy in a 20-team league that consistently puts you on the top of the batting averages. I mean, boring player, but good.
I agree. And I'm not really a chain guy. I know you mentioned him, just not really a big fan.
Power projection for me. 20 homer power at shortstop, so.
Yeah, but I do like Sierra, like him a lot. I think that it's going to take some time, obviously, but I do like a lot of – whenever Houston drafts a young guy, I really always take notice because they know what they're doing, and it's especially offensively, they know what they're doing, and they always get high upside fantasy assets as well. So I always like to look into them. I do have Lucius Fox as a guy that, you know, I don't have him written as an honorable mention, but I do want to mention him since we're going way longer than we were supposed to anyways. And
hey, this position, man, we need to.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys on here, but Lucius – the reason I have him above Rondon is just because he has one flashier tool, and that to me can play better in fantasy than somebody like Rondon, who his stock has fallen a little bit since last year. I
shoot for the moon, and Rondon is a shoot for the moon type of guy. So
yeah, he might be better coming into this year. We'll see how, you know. I mean, he's still so young. He's only 18. I know the Rays signed him when he was like, I think he was what, 15 or 16 at the time when they signed him.
He played his first year at 16, 17, played last year at 17, 18. So, that's
so it's going to take time. I mean, last year he only put up 7 home runs and 1 steal. He got caught 5 times, so that's certainly a problem. Yeah. But it's way too early to even really make a real notion in terms of what he might be or might not be. It's going to take some time for somebody like Rondon. So I would just kind of, you know, stash him and wait and see with somebody like that. But, yeah, I think we've pretty much covered it all. Matt, once again, tell everybody where you can reach out on Twitter and what you're doing nowadays.
RIP Andy, first of all.
Yeah, RIP Andy. Sorry for going through the best position in all fantasy, at least in the prospect realm, without you, buddy.
Sorry, I'm not sorry. How about that? MD Tomp, FWFB. Again, I'm going to keep hyping it up. Check out that list, please. A lot of work put into it. So go to there. We love doing these prospect pods. Keep listening to that. Keep listening to the main show on Monday. Keep helping Friends of Fantasy Benefits climb up the rankings. We all work hard. Buy a t-shirt. Buy a sweatshirt. Buy your wife a t-shirt or your girlfriend a t-shirt, your boyfriend a t-shirt, whatever. Buy some stuff from us. We could use it. It helps us with our site, and they look cool too. So, yeah.
Yeah, we also have sexy underwear available if you are willing to go that route.
You have to hit Ben Brennis up on Twitter for those. He's the one in charge of those.
Yeah, he's the exclusive retailer for that, but to each their own. You can catch me on Twitter, at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out everything on the site, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. We have great content coming out on there. We have a new writer as well, JR, if I'm not mistaken. JR,
yes, sir.
Yeah, he's a crazy cat, but we all love him. He's already becoming a very, you know, good, you know, source in the group of just random information and fun time. So like him a lot. Check his stuff out. Check out all of our writers on the site as well. Check out our rankings. Check out my rankings on Fantasy Pros. I should have all of those done sometime later this week. Check out my daily matchups column on Baseball HQ this season. And I think I didn't leave anything out. Oh, check out all the other podcasts. We have a podcast every day of the week. I know the main show is on Monday, so that's with me, you, and Justin, Matt. But yeah, check everything out on the site. We've been, again, really, you know, skyrocketing in terms of our ranks and our listenership and everything, and it's really helping us out. So please continue.
Five-star review.
We already filled the Listener League, one of them. So if you want to look to get into the second Listener League or win some of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits merchandise, I know Justin is willing to give away some of that merchandise that he has gotten in exchange for 5-star reviews. Just make sure you send a screenshot of the review to him on Twitter, at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can also send it to us as well, if you would like, or the at Fantasy Benefits Twitter handle. You can also send any questions at the friendswithfantasybenefits@gmail.com email address if you want to get them answered on the show. We do take minor league questions. We haven't really done that yet since we've been going through the list, but if you would like to have a question answered on air, we will definitely do that for you, especially if it's a good one. So it's not just we're going through the prospects now, but we're certainly going to get more into the Keeper Dynasty League realm once we get started into the season here, because we're not going to be really wanting to talk about 2 weeks worth of bat sample sizes with some of these guys.
So. Yeah, it's very important. You guys let us know what you want. If you're having an internal struggle, if you want to know who's valued higher for Dynasty, Javier Baez or Dansby Swanson, then listen to me. I'll tell you. You know, me and Mike will, and Andy and whoever else is on here will answer your questions for you. So I had that question on Twitter. That's why I brought that up. But
yeah, there's a bunch of different leagues out there. So
sure.
Anyways, check out everything, and you know, for Matt and myself, thank you for listening, and good luck in your drafts.
Every night I get you on the telephone, we sleep and we talk and we play till